Okay, so the next presenter in the colloquium is Gabi Kablitz, who is based at the University of Kiel. Gabi has been working on a Dorbes, Volkswagen Foundation Dorbes project over the last several years, documenting indigenous knowledge of the lexicon for the Marquesas Islands in the Pacific.
Okay, maybe I need to... All right. Okay. Today I'm going to talk about our dictionary project on the Marquesas Islands in French Polynesia. For those of you who haven't heard about the Marquesas, they are just in the Pacific neighborhood of the Hawaiian Islands, about 3,000 miles to the southeast. As it is already revealed in the title of my talk, I will discuss one particular aspect of our lexicographic work, namely how and why we documented indigenous knowledge in order to create multimedia encyclopedic lexica for the Marquesian languages. The multimedia lexica are created with the multimedia lexicon tool Lexis, which has been recently developed by the technical group of the Max Planck Institute for Psycholinguistics in Nijmegen. And it is one of the tools which have been specifically developed for or within the Dorbes program. Just to give you a little overview of my talk, I will first talk about the background and some of the objectives which are relevant for our talk of our dictionary or MELT project. Then about some innovative aspects of Lexis for creating lexica. And then finally, the main part of my talk will be about the different ways of documenting and representing indigenous knowledge within and beyond the lexica entry. For this purpose, I will also show you how I work with members of the speech community in order to achieve the different kinds of indigenous knowledge representations. So before starting about details of the project and dictionary work, I would just like to say a few words about what we mean by indigenous knowledge. So quite generally, indigenous knowledge is the specific knowledge about entities of the world, which is meaningful to a group of people sharing the same language and culture. So indigenous knowledge is therefore a kind form of encyclopedic knowledge, but it is sort of exclusive to an indigenous group of people. For example, Marquesians make a link between the blooming periods of certain trees and the abundance of certain fish species. The term indigenous is used interchangeably with cultural or encyclopedic, local or ecological knowledge. And just to mention this at the beginning of my talk, my own work is very much based on, inspired by work of Gonklin, Pauli, Hyman, Ulrike Mosel, and Coward and Grimes. The MELT project evolved from a previous Dorbes language documentation project on the Marquesian languages between 2003 and 2006, which was our first attempt to document indigenous knowledge. We collected and annotated a wide range of different topics and speech genres covering various domains of the culture, such as food preparation, narratives, plant medicine, trick languages, handicrafts, plant products, and so forth. Many of the documents about the material culture are video recordings, in which the consultants demonstrate and explain procedures and preparation forms. As a byproduct of this documentation project, we also started to build up a trilingual lexical database and thematic glossaries of topics which had become important foci of our documentation, such as breadfruit varieties, food preparation, and so forth. The lexical data are extracted from our recordings, but they are also based on the many field notes we took during the transcription and annotation process in the field, often adding specialized vocabulary which would not appear in the recordings as such. About some objectives. So our main objective, of course, was to create a multimedia lexica by enriching the lexicon with indigenous knowledge, and therefore move from a trilingual dictionary with simple glosses towards a more ethnographic type of dictionary. We also wanted to make the whole documentation more accessible to the speech community by representing an indigenous organization of the data. And another one of our main objectives was also to involve the speech community much more in the dictionary making process, hoping that this would also contribute to language maintenance. Lexis has four innovative ways of creating lexica. These are not really innovations which are exclusive to Lexis. Other lexicon software shares similar innovations, but for this talk I'm going to focus on Lexis because it was an integral part of our project. Lexis has a flexible scheme of linking different kinds of digital, multimedia, and archive files with lexical data, and the possibility of creating relational links between data elements of the Lexis database. The web-based editing possibilities, in theory, allow a collaboration with the speech community outside fieldwork periods and the creation of the lexicon by the speech community members themselves, but this is only in theory. The really interesting new features of Lexis are undoubtedly the archive linking capacity and the relational linking device on Vickers, on which I will focus today. All right, it's a bit faster than me. The interesting aspect about the relational linking device is that relations between words of a language can be much better visualized. Conventional paper dictionaries with an alphabetically ordered structure only have, as we all know, limited possibilities of making these relations visible. The relational linking device in Vickers, in principle, allows the user to create associations and relations between any kind of data stored in the lexical database in Lexis. So one can create a dense network of lexical and cultural data in a thematically organized way, which is meaningful to different kinds of user groups. So to give you just an example, on the right-hand side of the slide, you see a screenshot from Vickers. For example, in our dictionary, we have included proper names of protagonists of legends, but these the entries barely document the complex relationship they hold to each other. And in Vickers, you can actually visualize these kinds of relationships. That's just one example. Mm-hmm. There are basically four different ways of how we documented indigenous knowledge. One important way of documenting indigenous knowledge is, for example, the use of vernacular language in lexical entries by writing monolingual definitions and encyclopedic articles. In particular, monolingual definitions are an important step towards understanding and preserving word meaning from the native speaker's perspective. The use of vernacular language by speech community members to express, for example, word meanings stimulate the expressive power of their language because they might rarely use constructions or even totally new constructions. And therefore, it can be really a contribution to language maintenance. Another way of representing indigenous knowledge in our lexicon was the creation of knowledge spaces in Vickers by establishing an informal ontology about the most important plants of the traditional culture and a folk taxonomy on marine life. The methodology of collecting the data, of course, was very different, which I will briefly demonstrate later on, but the results have also supported the semantic analysis of word meaning in the lexicon. When making dictionaries in and for endangered speech communities, you will quickly realize that lexicographic practice does not really combine with linguistic theories of lexical semantics. Apart from the difficulty of finding adequate translation equivalents in the target language, which is a problem of bilingual or multilingual lexicography anyway, there is also the problem that many head words cannot be translated at all because they denote complex phonema, procedures, which are culture-specific. The only way to adequately document word meaning is, first of all, to write definitions and also often include encyclopedic information. For example, on the bottom of the slide, you can see an example of a definition of a head word, the head word R. An R is not just an ancient stone structure, but it's a sacred place which with certain important functions which are detailed in the definition. Okay, many lexicographers have to deal or have dealt with the question to what extent cultural knowledge can be considered part of language. I'm not going to answer this question here now because it's really a very difficult question to answer. But let me just say this here in the context of documenting an endangered or under-described language. It is surely self-evident that one should integrate as much cultural knowledge connected with a certain word as possible. There is definitely a need for accuracy and completeness of information also, because some species of the natural environment you might want to document in your dictionary might be endangered themselves, are rare to find, or have disappeared from the local environment, so that a multimedia documentation of these species is not possible or very difficult to achieve. So a verbal description might be the only way to document them, and it's needless to say that detailed local knowledge should be part of the description. Of course, there are the well-known constraints of time and money, and that's the reason why we have chosen to follow Ulrike Moser's thematic approach of dictionary making by creating so-called mini-dictionaries of a particular semantic domain of the language, which can be accomplished in a relative short period of time. We have created mini dictionaries in the domain of marine life and plants and aspects of the traditional culture which are related to plants. So most of our headwords denote concrete entities of the natural environment, preparation forms, techniques, and procedures. For the semantic domain, we prepared style guides which would give the field assistants an idea of what kind of information the definition could include. There's lots of interesting information about style guides in Coward and Grimes in particular. For terms of the fauna and flora, the definitions are mainly descriptions about form, appearance, habitat, texture, color, size, and so forth. But they also contain encyclopedic knowledge or functional aspects of usage if consultants felt them to be important. As a rule of thumb, we said a description of plants and animals should contain enough detailed information that other native speakers can identify the entity in question. Often the cultural uses of the entity are only briefly mentioned in the definition. You can see that in the upper part of the example of Bohuatai. And then the detailed cultural knowledge of cultural uses of the entity are then described separately in small encyclopedic articles, which you can see below the photos. Each cultural use is headed by a keyword in capital letters, for example, apau, medicine, and so forth, and then the uses are described. For the Marquesian field assistants, the writing of definitions was the most difficult task of language documentation they had done so far, according to them. It was not so much because definitions were a newly emerging speech genre for which they quickly developed a distinctive style, but it was more a problem of finding adequate terms for color, form, and appearance and analyzing the different senses of a headword. In general, part-whole relationships can be a real challenge because a plant or any body part can be quite differently partitioned in the target languages or the target language of your lexicon, so it needs really careful attention to detail. The main task of a field worker in this process is to challenge the word definitions if necessary and ask for precisions. This actually comes quite naturally, I think, because a field worker, as a field worker and second language learner of the field language, you always are eager to understand word meaning and language use. Here's, for example, an example of documenting the different senses of the plant part kofa, where the interaction between field worker and field assistant was quite important. The field assistants first defined kofa as a giant leaf stalk of papaya, banana, a giant fern, and giant fern and palm trees, so of trees without branches. We then came across the use of kofa with pinnate leaves, as at first they wanted to make one definition because pinnate leaves share a physical similarity with palm leaves. But then, after trying to define joint characteristics, which would make up one definition, they decided that there are two different types of plant parts with different classes of plants. I would now like to turn to the second way of representing indigenous knowledge, namely outside the lexical entry in Vikos knowledge spaces. In Vikos, we wanted to create thematically organized spaces from an ethnobotanical perspective by taking plants as a point of departure, because much of their traditional culture is based on plants. The different cultural uses of the most important trees were elicited in detail for each tree. I started by naming all the different plant parts of the plant and then established the different cultural uses of each plant part. For example, how are the different parts of the breadfruit tree used in food preparation, canoe building, and so forth. These tree ontologies were first created during fieldwork with paper cards, on which the consultants then wrote names of the different plant parts and keywords of the corresponding cultural uses, and then arranged them according to their own cultural associations. The tree ontologies we created in the field were then integrated into Vikos. If we had annotated sessions in the archive or other multimedia documents of the cultural uses available, we tried to link them into the tree ontology. Unfortunately, the linking of multimedia documents in Vikos is still very restricted, but there are workaround solutions of creating links to the archive or multimedia documents. For example, I've created databases in Lexis, which only basically contain the relevant multimedia data. For example, on the slide, you can see a link from the Vikos knowledge space to a photo gallery, which contains the relevant multimedia data, a sequence of photos of the particular preparation procedure. And you can do the same for archive links, video clips, and so forth. The creation of folk taxonomies is another way of representing and organizing indigenous knowledge in our lexicon. 200 species of marine animals were classified according to aspects which were important to speech community members, such as fishing techniques, locations, baits, and so forth. We prepared photos on blank file cards, which left enough space to code the data and make notes. The Makisian consultants then had to sort the cards into classes and subclasses according to their own understanding and find names for each class. Altogether, we made, some observations. I'm just going to briefly summarize some observations on their classification of fish families, because they're correspondent to scientific fish families. As is expected, the folk classifications are in principle very different from scientific classifications because they apply different classification criteria, but there are some overlap with scientific groupings. It was interesting also to observe that classes were not always formed with regard to their linguistic grouping. And of course, as expected, not all classes have generic terms. If there was no generic term, they were encouraged to find a descriptive label for the class. As you can see, there are some examples on the slide. Maybe just to mention one more thing. As reported elsewhere, functional aspects play an important role in folk classification. When creating classes of fish, they grouped, for example, the following fish together. So this class of fish comprises six different scientific fish families, which are very different in form and appearance, as you can see. But they were grouped together according to a quality they have in common, namely thick skin, and that they do not need to be scaled after fishing. Of course, representing folk taxonomies and dictionaries also cause some problems and challenges. For example, the non-lexicalized descriptions of classes have to be part of the lexicon in order to create the folk taxonomies in Vikos. The folk taxonomies can vary across consultants. I'm probably not going to go into details there. Maybe shall I just conclude? Okay, the documentation of indigenous knowledge in dictionaries assures a better and more authentic documentation of word meaning and does justice to the intricate relationship between language and culture. It is basically very much an effort between a fieldworker and local language documenter of the speech community. And then also what we found when we did our folk classifications, it also refines the senses of the head word and contribute to a better understanding of word meaning. Then new technologies such as VCOS or LexisVCOS allow to visualize networks of linguistic and cultural knowledge in innovative ways and create a more intuitive approach for the speech community to access the documentation of their language and culture. In particular, Mosel's thematic approach of dictionary making is a realistic model which allows the creation of ethnographic dictionaries in a satisfactory way both for both the field worker and the speech community. Okay, thank you.